This is another data set I really, really like because it's a real data set and we were able to have some positive impact. So we're going to do a Q-by-Q model, but now we're going to allow nonlinearities. We're going to see if the story changes. Each year, any of the city's firefighters who would like can take the captain's exam. The same procedure is used each year. 4 weeks before the date of the captain's exam, everybody who plans to take the exam attends a session during which they take a pretest and receive their score. Actually, it's set up this way. I didn't put this into play. There's always been this thing where you can check, see how you're doing. Copies of study questions, 5 questions in a bundle, are available, will be checked out of the public libraries, which is how we were able to monitor practice. It's not perfect. That's all I got. During the 4 weeks leading up to the captain's exam, after several analyses revealed strong relationships between practicing and passing the exam, we decided to explore what predicts practicing. What this boiled down to is that it seemed to the powers that be that the best folks weren't doing well. So maybe the problem is that the best folks aren't practicing. That we need to figure out why people are practicing as much as they are, because we know practice leads to performance. And since we're not getting the performance we expect, let's go blame it on practice and study practice. It's actually fairly clever that a bunch of city administrators thought of this on their own. I great group to work with. This is also down in Dallas, and the amount of money that we had to use was extraordinary because it really, they have a tremendous system down there. So we chose to examine how pretest performance and prior experience were related to the number of items studied. In part because what they were finding out is that people who almost get it one time were bombing it the next year instead of crushing it. There's something going on. It's not practice, it's how much they practice. They actually brought in a very good company who built the practices for them and built the test, and psychometrically, we're in a nice place here. It's just that, I don't want to put this impolitely, but the wrong people are practicing the wrong amount. So we go get the mean and the standard deviation for both of our variables, and we're going to need all of that information. We're going to need the means for mean centering, but we're going to need the standard deviations for plotting. So let's go build ourselves the elements of a model. We mean center prior experience and initial performance. I have no reason to have particular interest in particular values of either variable, so mean centering's a great idea. I go build my quadratic terms for each. Now remember, I need 4 interaction terms. I need a linear interaction term built from the 2 original centered variables. I need a quadratic interaction term built from the square of both variables. I also need a quadratic prior experience linear initial performance build out of the square of prior and the original of initial. And I need a linear prior quadratic initial build out of the linear of the prior and the quadratic of the initial. That's my whole model. And you want to be careful because very often people don't include all 4. I don't know why, but these things are seen as frightening. In the 2 best regression books that I know, they don't show the full model. Each of them does the linear and picks one of these 2 quadratics. So I set this up as a linear model first and then added in the quadratics. Not the only possibility. The other strong possibility would be putting in the main effects and the quadratic main effects, then the linear interactions, and then the quadratic interactions. There's all sorts of possibilities. And remember, we're squaring and multiplying a lot here. We are jacking up the collinearity dramatically. And you can run into problems. So the first model accounts for 46% of the variance, which is significant. The larger model accounts for 68% of the variance, which is significant. The increase is about 23% of variance, and that was also significant. even with a fairly small sample size, we got some nice, pretty data. These are actually the pilot data. The whole study is considered proprietary, and I can't show you that. So here's an example of the different ways that we might have put things in. Linear, then quadratic. Main, then interactions. Linear, main, quadratic, main, linear interaction, quadratic interaction. Opposite order. Linear, main, linear interaction, quadratic, main, quadratic interaction. Remember that no matter what order you stuff these in, when you get them all in, you get the same model. In terms of the R-square change, different entry orders can change your mind about which things have additive improvement to which other things. My recommendation is that instead of trying to decide which of these is truth, love, and beauty, you run them and you compare them to each other. They're asking different questions about complexity. This one says, if I build a linear model, does jacking it up to a quadratic model tell me anything? This says, if I build a main effects model, does jacking it up to an interaction model tell me anything? They're different versions of, do I get anything out of the additional complexity? Because the different order changes which thing you're asking to compete with what's already in the model.
So it's possible that one of these cases might show up a second step R-square change, which is insignificant.
Yeah.
And that is when you kind of take a step back and say, maybe.
Yeah, that's when you want to be careful about throwing shit away. Because remember, I can't have the quadratic interaction term in the model without the quadratic main effect. These things are hierarchical. And so you want to be careful about what you throw away, because things are only representing what you think they are in the full model.
Yeah, because the final multivariate model basically shows everything as a part of everything else.
Well, competing with everything else, yes.
So if we throw out anything thinking that it's not leading to a significant R-square change...
We've changed the question we ask, and that might be why we got a different answer. So if we look at the bland model, the interaction model, we see that we have no main effects in an interaction. We can see that when we include the quadratic terms, the prior experience shows up now. It didn't before. And there's a quadratic term to it. And notice that we didn't get all of the interaction terms, but we did get one of them. In fact, the only one we got was the most complicated one. So, sort of a story about the advantage of complexity tolerance. So this walks you through what each of the things means. I'm not going to read these to you. If you do it by GLM, remember that GLM wasn't designed for working with fundamentally quantitative variables. It tolerates them. And so you get a funny-looking ANOVA statement. There's no by, because there's no grouping variables. And each separate term gets plugged in. And so it's the full model, and when we do that, we get things back as F-tests. And we get back exactly the same set of regression weights that we get out of ANOVA. I'm sorry, that we get out of regression. There's what the linear model looks like. It's a nice model. It suggests that people with low prior experience study more. People with high prior experience study less. It suggests that for people at high levels of experience, that I gotta look. I'm having trouble with seeing red and maroon on there. So this suggests that high performers with high levels of prior experience practice the least. Makes sense. Among those with a lot of prior experience, the people with lower initial performance study more. And you get a little bit of crossover back there, but remember, this is a linear-only model. So if you trace any of them back far enough, you get crossover. There's an interaction. There's a crossover point mathematically somewhere. But it's out here at one standard deviation below. That flip never becomes reliable. Plus, all of that is going to get uninteresting as soon as we look at the curve model. So the least variability in practice is these people with good initial performance. That good initial performance is lulling. The people with bad initial performance, the people with low prior experience and high prior experience, see that as a clear sign that they should go study their ass off. The problem is, that's not who we want passing the captain's exam. These folks are typically, very often, these are kids who can take the captain's exam but cannot be promoted to captain because they don't have enough time on the job. These are often people who, economically speaking, boy, I learned a lot about city politics when I was doing this work. Economically speaking, if you go to the cost of promoting them to captain, you're not going to have them long enough that it's going to be worthwhile. Or, in less polite terms, a lot of these people, there's a reason they haven't already been promoted. See, if you pass the captaincy exam, it only stands for 3 years. And if you are not promoted to captain during those 3 years, you have to retest. So some of these people, this is the number of tests. They've been eligible for promotion for 30 years, passed the test 12 times, and have not been promoted. They're studying their ass off. There's no hope. So the point is, that is a much more informative model that makes different predictions than this one. You've got to be able to handle the complexity of the nonlinear terms. You've got to be able to handle the complexity of the nonlinear interactions.